Welcome back. It's a world premiere for the St. Louis Symphony on Saturday night, and it's something quite different. Not words and music, but pictures and music. The symphony will perform French composer Olivier Messiaen's From the Canyons to the Stars, a symphonic tribute to America's spectacular Western National Parks. The piece will be accompanied by striking visual accompaniment, a series of big-screen photographs of those parks. The photographs were taken by noted landscape photographer Deborah O'Grady. She has a music background which lent itself well to that project. She and symphony music director David Robertson joined me in studio yesterday to talk about the project, a project Robertson admits is one of the symphony's most important.
Well, I think the thing is we've done performances where we've had visual accompaniment before, and we've done programs that have a kind of dramatic arc to them, whether they're operas or whether they're stories of some sort with music involved. But this is one that really takes the notion of a piece of music and explores what it can really do and where it can really go. The basis of Messiaen's composition From the Canyons to the Stars comes from his experience of the real visual and visceral experience of Bryce Canyon, Zion Canyon, and Cedar Breaks in the south of Utah. These are incredible geological formations, and for Messiaen, the combination of his love of nature, his feeling that nature really expressed a very deep divinity, and the birds that he found there, and his love of birdsong, which for him was the true kind of incarnation of music and God's love for man in music. All of this comes together in this piece, which is a piece of a little bit more than an hour and a half in 12 movements. And for those who know the canyons and the areas very well, I think even if you might find certain aspects of the music challenging, the overall thrust of the piece comes through. But I've performed it many times where it's just been the concert piece, and I've always felt that for audiences that are not aficionados of the nooks and crannies of Bryce Canyon, it sort of leaves a kind of puzzled experience. And so I've been looking for, I guess, 15, maybe 20 years for a collaborator to do a project in which we use Messiaen's piece as the departure point for a whole exploration of what the music is telling us, but from a visual point of view. And Deborah O'Grady is the perfect person for that and has done something that is better than anything I could have ever imagined when we started speaking about it.
Deborah, tell me about your role in pulling all this together. I mean, obviously you've been working on it for a fairly long time, haven't you?
Yes, I have. I've been working on this piece for a little more than 2 years. I first visited the places that are in the piece that Messiaen wrote music about in late 2013, and then 2014 and 15 were very much about making trips to these places, making photographs and videos, and then being in my studio studying the score and finding images that, for me, worked in concert with the music to bring out the emotional, the visual importance of what was happening in the music.
Is this something that you could have pulled off without your own music background, because you do have one that's fairly significant?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so, but then how can I say that? I don't know. I mean, for me, Messiaen has always been a favorite composer since I was very young, actually. Mm. So the opportunity to do this, and I didn't know this piece very well at all. It's not done very often, and I had to go out and get some recordings and get the score and really dive into it.
But you have said that it's difficult. It's not easy to listen to. I believe I've seen you quoted as saying, at least in the early going.
Well, you know, I actually love this piece. I think it's just incredibly genius and incredibly beautiful. I do know there are friends who've said, oh, I want to listen, and they get a recording, and then they'll email me or something and say, I don't understand this piece. I don't really like it. And, you know, until today, can I just say this? The orchestra came on stage today for the first rehearsal, and I've been living with recordings of this piece for over 2 years. When the orchestra started to play, I just started to weep. I broke down because the experience of this music live with musicians on the stage in a concert hall is like being in Zion Canyon. You're surrounded with all the colors, all the textures. It's just, you cannot get that from a recording. I don't care how great the recording is or how many speakers there are in the room. It's just, it lives in a different way.
David, isn't that exactly what you want to hear the reaction to be to this?
Well, that is the thing. And in fact, my initial feeling that the piece could benefit from this type of presentation really comes from moments where in the last movement, which is called Zion and the Celestial City, because when you see Zion Canyon and the formations and the trees and the colors of the rocks and the way that the stone particularly has been shaped by the elements, there's a sense of awe that is amazing. And, of course, for Messiaen, this was like the New Jerusalem is in the New Testament and this whole idea of the heavenly city. And so for him, you know, he thought, well, how do I do this? And he came up with this melody, which is almost literally the contour of some of the different rock
formations,
sort of formations yeah. and columns and structures that are there, which is and it keeps going on that way for a while. It comes back, and the whole thrust of it is as though you were walking around in the canyon and you turn around and you see these familiar landscapes, but now from another vantage point. And I've tried to explain this to orchestras because people will play dee-do-do-do, which is fine. They're playing the correct notes, but they're not playing the shape of the rock. And so you have to say what the rock is like, and you have to say, look, there are places where you can walk in between these two rock walls in a river, and it's 300 feet vertical on either side of you.
He annotated the score, did he not, to some degree? So that there's
Great extent. Yeah. And the thing is that Messiaen was a combination of extraordinary sophistication and childlike wonder. And that sometimes is difficult for a number of people. So he used series of scales, and we'll explain some of this at the beginning of the concert in a way so that people, I hope, will feel at home and able to approach the work in their own individual way. But he would use scales in ways that were unusual. And one of the characteristics of this is that you'll have what seem like very dense chromatic harmonies that then all of a sudden open up on a very simple major chord, almost as though you're going through thick brush, and then you come upon a meadow where everything seems so simple and clear. And this is something that, you know, that the music and the birdsong and the type of ideas he's bringing out in the music are both very literal, and yet for Messiaen, obviously a phenomenal analogy for everything divine.
Deborah, how did that help you, the annotations and the textual component to his work?
Oh, that helped me very much. Sure. I read as much as I could. I, of course, translated all the things that were in the score. Every movement has a little paragraph devoted yeah. to it in the opening volume of the score, so you can read about his intentions or what his own relations were, his own, you know, his own ideas about it. So I read about him. I read what he had written. I went to Paris and had a long conversation with Claude Samuel, who was a very good friend of Messiaen, who had very long conversations that he recorded and published as books. And those books are full of insights, both from Claude Samuel and from Messiaen, who spoke very articulately about his own work.
One of the things that I have read, and again quoting you, is a concern that with the visual, it might take away from the music. I think you said something like, it's like going to a movie and not hearing the music because the visual is so strong.
I've had that experience.
Yeah.
Partly it's a physical thing where the screen is hanging up high and the musicians are sitting down on the stage and you're kind of looking up and down and up and down and you're wondering where you should look next. And, you know, it becomes a kind of like a tennis match thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had the experience at the end where I've said, oh, now please play the music again because I want to hear it. Mm-hmm. And so two ways that I worked with this. One was in the design, the set design. We brought the screen right down to the floor and just built a little horizon line behind the orchestra to keep light on the stage from bleeding up onto the screen. And then the lighting designer, who is just wonderful, brilliant young man, put lights on the stage in such a way that the orchestra is sitting in a pool of colored light. Mm. And so all of this, when you look down on that stage, you're seeing all of it at once. I mean, there's just something magical. It's like a jewel on that stage making music. And I really worked very, very hard to be visually as true to what was happening in the music, the phrasing. For example, David says, you know, the brush and the sort of tangled harmonies that then open up to a major chord. So there are often times where I'll do a long crossfade during some of those, you know, multicolored moments and then have it slowly resolve into the picture that you want to see. And it goes exactly with the music.
David, do you have any concerns that the visual takes away, draws away from the music?
No, I think Deborah's background as a composer allowed her to realize that much of the visual imagery and the amount of material that she took from those areas that she is not showing us is probably enough to make three or four more video presentations. But the actual generating idea for anything that happens on the screen comes from the music. And so there's a sense, rather than the other way around, where you've made the visuals first and then you've put music to it, which is how films tend to be made and a lot of visual art forms are experienced. This one is much more about the music seems to generate what it is that we see, and therefore the music is always in the driver's seat. And there are moments where you are very taken by the images, but Deborah is one of the few artists who understands if I do something that's busy here at this particular place, it will actually ask your brain to really concentrate on this at the expense of the other. And in fact, these wonderful places where she has got quite busy things going on that in a wonderful way actually make you aware of the intensity of the music in an absolutely striking fashion.
Two things I'd like to get to before we have to say goodbye. One is you've made the reference to birdsong, and that's very, very important to Messiaen.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you mean by that? For the audience that doesn't understand what you're saying.
You know, this is a real threshold. Once you have played a piece of Messiaen, you never listen to birds quite the same way. Mm-hmm. Messiaen thought of himself as an ornithologist and really went out notating birdsong. And while he didn't do it with a tape recorder, he did it with a pencil and music manuscript paper. He felt that his notations of these birds were absolutely true to what it was they were doing. And so this whole kind of almost found object, in the Duchamp sense, is really very much part of what he felt music expressed. Here were these incredible musicians just flying around and singing their own songs for lots of different reasons in lots of different areas. And for him, this is an extension of the harmony of creation. He was very Catholic. In his composition studio in the Rue de Marcadet in Paris, where I visited him a number of times, above his writing table was the portrait of the Pope.
But we do not hear birds as we do in Respighi's Pines of Rome, for instance.
No, but in fact, one of the things that you realize after you've done Messiaen is that we don't actually listen to birds. We hear that there's tweeting going on, but we're not actually paying attention to the melodies. Whereas after you've worked with Messiaen, or indeed after you've listened to Messiaen, suddenly when you start listening to birds, when you go into Forest Park, you really begin to pick out their melodies in a different way. And it's a language that is very developed, and I think most ornithologists would probably agree that they tend not to really listen carefully to the birds.
And they are talking to each other.
I think that's indeed
been pretty well established. Mm-hmm. One other thing, and Deborah, I'll start with you on this. He had synesthesia, which means that he saw sounds in color. Mm-hmm. Did that inform your work at all? I'm sure it did with the music, but how about with you?
At the beginning, I had hoped that I could get more into that in the music, and I spent a lot of time actually picking out which chords were green with gray flecks and which ones were gold with purple. I mean, they're very, very specific. But then I realized that that wouldn't work. Uh-huh. I couldn't make the audience experience Messiaen's synesthesia. I couldn't do it myself. Mm. There are places in the score where he is very specific about what color it is. He's very specific at the very end of the piece that the chord that you hear is celestial blue. And so there are places where we do definitely link the colors that you're seeing to his music. But otherwise, no, not really.
And David, how do you work with that?
Well, I spoke with Messiaen on a number of occasions about that. And we were discussing the stained glass windows in the Saint-Chapelle in Paris. You know, and I said, so when you're looking at them and the clouds are going behind and so the intensity of the light is different on the different colors. And he said, oh, yes, then it's like I hear a series of very beautiful chords in my mind's ear. So I think when one looks for that, what you're careful to do is make sure that the colors of the harmony, which are there, and musicians talk about colors even if they don't have the synesthetic experience, that we work to get all of these different shadings of overtones and things which make up what we call color in music as clear as possible. And Messiaen has made it very easy for us in the way he's written for all the instruments.
It sounds like it's going to be just a wonderful evening. I'm sure it is going to be. David Robertson, thank you so much for being with us. Deborah O'Grady, wonderful to see you. Congratulations on all your hard work. It's obviously paying off.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Landscape photographer Deborah O'Grady and St. Louis Symphony music director David Robertson talking about tomorrow night's sold-out premiere of the symphony's audio-video performance of Olivier Messiaen's From the Canyons to the Stars. Robertson will also take that production to California and Australia in the weeks ahead. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll have a holiday rebroadcast of my interviews with Simeon Wright, the cousin of Emmett Till. Wright was an eyewitness to the incident that led to Till's murder, which helped launch the civil rights movement. We'll also talk with Tavis Smiley about his book on Martin Luther King, and we'll hear a local student's reflection on Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis On the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.